welcome to another episode of Tide Chasers Podcast. Super excited for our guest today, but first I'd like to introduce my co-host, Qua. What's going on, Qua?
What's going on, man?
Got a good one ahead of us here. We got our first lady angler on the podcast. Super excited for this one. What do you think?
Oh, definitely. This is going to be one of my favorites because you know what it's all about, right? Fly fishing?
I know. She's a fly girl for sure. So basically, we're going to get into this here shortly. But first, I'd like to tell you where you can find us. You can find us on Facebook.com/Tide Chasers Podcast. You can also find us at Tide Chasers Tide_Chasers. We're going to be on all the platforms, all of your podcast platforms. There is a link in our bio on the Instagram page as well. But without further ado, I would like to introduce our guest today, Nicole. Welcome, Nicole.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. We're super excited for this episode. My daughter was starstruck every time she's seen your page. She's like, you got to talk to her. You got to get her on. And you're a big time role model in the fishing world. Even though you don't believe it, you are.
That makes me so hot hearing it. You know, I don't realize that people look up to me. So it's nice to hear, especially when it comes from you.
Perfect. Well, give us a little bit of information about who you are, where you're from, your social media contacts, and we'll dive right in.
Yeah. So I'm Nicole Baudette. I am currently living in Boston. So a lot of North Shore fishing that I do, obviously in the Salt. But I do a lot of traveling as well for fishing. I grew up in New Hampshire, went to school, college in New Hampshire. And I'm just a New England kid through and through. As far as contact, my social media contact, I usually just use Instagram and it's _NICB_. So Nick B is my nickname.
Nick B it is.
Nick B.
All right. So we're just going to jump right in. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your influences into the sport of fishing? What caused you to break into fishing and how it took off for you?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I mean, as a kid, we all do a little bit of fishing with our dads, right? Hook and worm with a bobber. And I grew up with, there were five of us kids and my two sisters and I were the closest in age. And every weekend my dad would be like, let's go fishing on the river. He lived on the river in New Hampshire. And we would always catch sunfish and pumpkin seeds and all of those types of things. But I never really stuck with it. As I got older, I did sports. And one of my boyfriends after college was really into outdoors type stuff, did a lot of fishing with his family. And I just wanted to do it too with him. And so we started fishing together toward the end of our relationship. And as we parted ways, I believe the last gift I bought him was a fly rod for Christmas.
Ouch.
And yeah, I was like, okay, well, have fun with that. Good luck. I don't think he ever used it when we were together. So part of me wanted to just become the best fisherman in the world because I knew that he was going to start off fly fishing and I wanted to be better than him.
Oh, that's awesome.
Okay.
So immature of me, but whatever, you know.
No, you had a cross to burn on that one. You had to get back for sure. I think you probably pulled it off, I'm guessing.
Well, we'll get into some of my accolades later, but I guarantee you he knows what I'm doing. So I was like, I'm going to be the best that I possibly can be. And I started really late in life. I'm 35 right now. I started fishing when I was fly fishing when I was probably 32.
Wow.
So this will be my fourth season fishing.
How about that? And you're killing it.
Yeah. Yeah. I checked out the Instagram. Yeah. She's killing it for a 4-year-old fly fisherwoman, man. She's crushing the game.
Now let's kind of talk about our first interactions. I know how I found you. I saw you on another New Jersey angler's Instagram page that I follow. And then later on, I was sitting down with my daughter, Kendall, and she was like, Daddy, what do you think about looking up some lady anglers? And I'm like, oof, this is going to be tough. Because as you know, there's a lot of people out there where fishing is not the primary reason why they're holding the fish. It's more to promote, you know, this bikini model, that bikini model. And I said, this is the girl you need to check out. This girl, this Nick B, she's a fly girl. She does it right. It's all about the fish. And then needless to say, I reached out to you. We've been in contact for like 2 or 3 years now.
Yeah. I definitely can agree with your comments there. It's definitely hard as a woman to find the right people to connect with.
Yeah.
Because there are so many other people that have ulterior motives.
Sure.
And it took me a while to figure that out myself. And although this is only going to be my fourth season, I still have a hard time letting people in and trusting them just as much as you guys do, you know, the whole spot burning or not being able to trust them or what are you really looking for? So social media over the last probably 2 years for me, I've kept it a lot less than I used to. I don't post a lot of stuff anymore just because even if you're posting pictures in clothes, you get the wrong attention.
I find myself reaching out to you every once in a while, make sure you're still alive over there.
I am alive. I'm preparing for the season.
So what initially drew you to fly fishing and at what age did, well, we know you started at 32 and what was it just your boy, your ex-boyfriend was a fly fisher or was it before that, that you had some love for fly fishing?
And— oh my goodness. I've always loved the outdoors and animals. And in college, my original major was zoology. And that's what I just wanted to do everything that had to surround myself with being outside. And my minor was going to be in marine biology. But I partied so hard in college my first semester that I could not pass any of my bio and chem classes. And I was like, this can't be happening. I have to find something else outside to do as a major. So I majored in recreation management. Next best thing, right?
Yeah.
So like my goal always was to stay outside fishing for some reason, because it's more of an individual sport. I was very drawn to, so, you know, ex-boyfriend aside, being outside alone, not needing to depend on anyone for anything. And the connection that you feel when you catch your own fish on a fly that you've tied or whatever it may be, whatever challenge you're working through that day is so fulfilling. So for that's sure. Why.
There's nothing better than catching a fish on something that you made yourself. I'll never forget the first striper. I caught him on a clouser, and it was this ratty looking clouser, but it worked and it caught a striper and I was stoked. So I know that feeling. It's amazing. Like to connect with a fish on something that you put together with your own hands. It's just, it takes that joy to the next level, the passion to the next level. So
100%.
Now, what was the first fish you caught on a fly rod and what is your largest fish on a fly rod?
Both the same species, striped bass, baby. First fish I caught on fly was months after I started fly fishing. I was the biggest failure. I paid people. I literally paid people to teach me how to fish. I went down to Miami for Miami Music Week and connected with somebody on Instagram and paid him hundreds of dollars to waste his time watching me make a fool of myself trying to cast a fly rod.
And here you are. It worked.
I made myself back. I think I made my way back to Boston 2 months later and finally caught my first striper on fly. And it was a good sized schoolie. And you know, it was all uphill after that, but, just disaster, disaster. my largest was also a striper on fly, and this is like the most emotional story I have about fishing. It was 2 years ago. I believe the picture that you used, for this episode is the magazine.
Yeah.
And the picture on the magazine is that fish.
That's your fly fish. Beautiful.
Well, I have a fly. I tied myself.
I haven't seen it yet. I'll be doing the editing for this episode for that picture. So I guess I'll see that.
Yes.
I'm headed out tomorrow on my first fly trip for big bass. Like our migratory bass just came up here. So I've loaded up the 9 weights and like I got all the big, the ball. You're okay. Yeah, I got the big flies loaded up, bunker flies and hollow bodies and stuff like that. I'm hoping I get something big tomorrow. So
better.
Now, Nicole, was that on a fly that you tied yourself to?
Yeah, it was a ratty one, like you said. Doesn't need to be perfect.
It's always the ratty ones. It's always the ratty ones that catches the biggest ones.
That's amazing. Yeah. I love it. So now, do you fly fish exclusively, or do you go outside the fly fishing world from time to time?
So I was very jaded in the beginning, and I was like, fly till I die. I'm not touching a spin rod. No effing way, right? But then I realized that I was wasting a lot of time trying to cast into 20 mile an hour wind, or I just couldn't get my casts out far enough. And when I started kayak fishing at night, 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, you can't fly fish in a kayak in pitch black. Like, it's just not possible. And to be able to get your fly down 12 feet or 8 feet, whatever it may be, it's just impossible. So I also spin. Kill okay. me now. Anyone who's going to give
that's
me
okay with us.
There's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, no, fly snobs can only go so high until we get to that point. Like, all right, we have to give in.
Yeah.
This is the way it works.
I'm mostly a spin caster myself. So no worries on our end. So how foreign does it feel to pick up that spin caster these days? Like, whenever you go to pick that up, because your go-to is going to be the fly rod, but you do some togging and things like that with the spin caster, right?
Yeah. And it's tough. It's very foreign to me. I have a lot of other things to figure out on that front. Yeah. Why my fingers are always like chapped up and bleeding from casting on that. It's not stripping line that I'm bleeding from. It's from casting whatever spin rod I'm trying to throw.
Yeah. I'll never forget the first time my buddy Trung, who was on a previous podcast with us, I was dead set on learning how to throw a bait caster, because for snakeheads, a lot of times you need extra distance. So bait casters, they're designed for distance. And I was like, I talk about a train wreck. I was an absolute train wreck. Like, I went out and practiced with him and another one of our friends, Andrew, one day. And I was just like all over the place, but I had this $600 plus setup just sitting in the corner of my room. And I'm like, gosh, I purposely bought a very expensive setup so I would force myself to use it. But God, it felt so foreign. Every time he would see me, he'd be like, where's the bait caster? I said, I left it at home. It's not here. And he's like, don't do that. Bring it with you every time. Even if you toss it for half the time, bring it with you every time. Mm-hmm. Then it'll become second nature. And now that's all I use for snakeheads is a bait caster. That's the only fish I use it for, really, but I use it for snakeheads. So
you just have to be prepared. Don't be wasting your time. You went out to do one thing and it's catch fish. And if you're going to, you know, have to give up what you love and go to your second best thing, so be it.
All right. So being striped bass is your favorite target. What types of things are you currently doing to prepare for the migration to reach your front door?
Oh my gosh. So I used to read books and go on Google and just flood my head with information that I thought would prepare me, and keeping a journal and just scouting out new spots. You name it, the same things that you guys do, I was doing. And I felt like I put so much into preparing that it made me less prepared. So this season, believe it or not, I'm not doing anything. Ooh. I'm just getting new gear, and I'm just going to keep going out to my spots and continuing to fish. And if they're there, they're there. And if they're not, they're not.
Are you, you going to tie up a bunch of fresh flies for the season, or are you going to, buy them?
Oh no, I tie most of my own.
Okay. Well, you said you weren't doing anything, so I had to ask.
Of course I'm doing that. I have to pass the time somehow. I'm losing my mind.
Well, don't you have some nice fish out on that lake behind you there? We'll talk about that a little bit. So when you go out with your fly rod, obviously wind is going to be a huge factor, because you need minimal wind to no wind at all. But what types of things are you looking for? Like, are you looking to, like, at the beginning of the migration, are you looking to hit like inland, like the jetties? Are you looking to hit the bays? Are you looking to hit river systems? Like, what is your go-to? You don't have to give away any spots, but like, what types of things are you looking for when you're ready to start catching those fish that are coming into your home waters there?
I'm always in the marshes in the beginning of the season. It's always the marshes. I have one behind my house. I don't really care if anyone knows. I don't even think anyone knows where I live anyway, but walking distance, I'll usually just drive my car because I have so much gear. and I take one of the dogs with me and I'll go out there for hours. And granted, it's very small schoolies. It's a great way to get ready and immersed into the migration. And then once the marsh kind of plays out, I'll move into some open ocean, where I live area. But it's, I don't really spend a lot of time. I'm not really sure what I'm trying to say right now. There's a lot of spots last year that didn't produce that I'm not sure if I'm even going to go back to this year unless I know that the migration is in full blown go sure. mode.
Yeah, I have a couple different spots that I have one spot that I went to 4 years in a row that didn't produce. Year five, caught six fish in the first 20 minutes. I knew they would be there at some point, but I just had to, I just kept doing it because it was on a direct route that I'd always traveled. I always drove past and I'm like, I'll stop here for a couple minutes, take some casts. Then I move on. But finally I'm like, this place sucks. I don't think I'll ever come back here. And then one day it produced six nice fish and like 30 minutes, 20 minutes. And it was like, all right. And I haven't gotten any since. So it's just like, I must've hit the jackpot the one time I went.
I need that luck. Cause there's a few spots that I thought would be unbelievable. And I'm like, nobody's here. Nobody knows. I'm going to crush it. And I came out empty handed every single time. And so discouraged.
And then you're like, maybe everybody knew about this, right?
Who knows?
So outside of striped bass, what other types of fish are you targeting on the fly rod? And what would you say has been your most challenging species to catch on the fly so far?
I will always love my saltwater fish. I went down to Florida a couple years ago and went for their giant albies, the Bonita. Yeah. Those were incredible on a 7-weight. Really enjoyed that a lot. But they're easy to catch. So honestly, the two hardest fish that I've targeted are actually freshwater species, which is even funnier because I'm like, fly till I die in the salt and salt this, salt that. My trips up to Pulaski, New York for steelhead. I'm sure you remember all of my posts and my just total disaster. You know, I would put 40 hours of fishing on that water and four different trips up and came up with like, I think I hooked one. So that one steelhead that I caught was definitely the fish of 1,000 casts, they say. Yeah.
Felt like you got the monkey off your back on that one, didn't you?
100%. And I don't think I'll ever go back because I don't, I can't put that kind of effort in again.
That's why I said a qual about my PB striped bass. Like I spent years chasing this fish. Once I finally caught it, it's like the air went out of the balloon. It's like, there's what's left. He's like, you got to try for your 50. I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty content now. Like,
yeah,
I got the monkey off my back.
So funny. You have brought up about the lake back here, cause I'm in New Hampshire right now. The other most difficult fish that I have been targeting are the largemouths in the pond. There's something different about these largies. And, so I have a 5-weight that I bring and I go on the paddleboard or sometimes in the kayak and, they only eat when they're rising. They won't eat any other way. So if I see them bubble and I can put the cast in the exact same spot where they've just bubbled within like 2 to 3 seconds, they'll come back up and eat whatever I've put in front of them. It doesn't matter what it is. It's just as long as it's there after they've come up. I have not been able to catch them any other way. No other way.
Now, have you targeted any like smallies or pike on the fly yet?
There are smallies in this pond. I've only caught one. No pike. I would love to try that, but that's another one of those things where it's like, do I have the patience for it or the skill?
Right.
I mean, you guys have probably fished for pike. It's incredibly difficult.
We have not. We actually, he and I have talked many a times this about doing it this spring, and it's just getting away from us because it's one thing or the next. Like there's so many fish to catch, so little time.
It's true.
Yeah, same thing. I want to do a muskie. I want to do muskie on the fly, and then I just haven't been able time to put together. Now, I literally that fish is the fish with 10,000 casts muskies. You know what I mean? But especially on the fly, it's a lot harder. But you know,
I don't know. I watched some kid pull one out of my back pocket one day when I was walleye fishing. I'm sitting there on a floating dock. I'm like, man, I'm not catching crap out here. Like usually I catch walleye all over the place. He throws a streamer in up under the dock, like literally where I'm standing, and pulls a 38 inch muskie out. Then I have to save his life because he gets out of his boat on the bank and slides down in the mud, water filling up in his waders because he's trying to get a cool picture.
Oh my
God. Literally pulled it out of my back pocket, like right under my feet. I'm looking down at it like that. It's nuts, nuts. Orange, big orange streamer like that big.
Erase that from your mind.
Yes.
Pretend it didn't happen.
So I had a question since you were talking about stripers in your marshes. I know we kind of get the migratory pattern up here in New Jersey, but like for your migratory, do you guys get the same thing? Do you guys get the schoolies first, the smaller ones? And then as it progresses, you get the bigger ones back there?
Yeah, we don't get any big ones in the marsh, but most of the time I don't see the big ones in the marsh. It's all schoolies.
Yeah, because I think Boston Harbor had some really good runs of big fish the past year or two, really big fish. But unless you had a boat, you ain't getting to them, right? Is that how?
Yeah, kayak for sure.
Kayak, yeah.
Yeah, that's my new thing.
You've been on those with your buddies, right?
Yeah, I've got one for this summer. I'm not messing around. I'm not doing the shore fishing stuff anymore. I don't know if you noticed, but I was very discouraged from all the waiting and BS on shore. So I was like, I'm doing this kayak game. Yeah. And if I have to put the time in, you know, between midnight and 4 a.m. instead of normal daytime fishing hours, so be it.
Yeah. I picked up a kayak last year and it was probably the best decision I've made. Now it's my fifth kayak, but this is the one that fits my style of fishing the best out of all the ones I've owned. And it's probably, I had one that was 3 or 4 times more expensive than the one I'm currently fishing from, but this one fits my style of fishing. So it's perfect. I can throw it on top of my roof and be on the way.
Good for you.
Kayaking is the way to go. I agree. Right? Right, boss?
I skipped the kayak phase. I went right into a flats boat.
Must be nice.
I don't know. It's just something about pulling around in like 8 inches of water, just looking for like schoolies in the flats, you know, tossing a fly, just pitching a fly to them, you know. It's just, and for me, it's, I'm over that phase of just catching fish. Right now I'm at the phase of I enjoy putting people on fish. So like when I'm on the back pulling around on the push pole, just, you know, calling out, you know, clock numbers to fly anglers, just to throw a fly onto a bass going the opposite direction. And the fact that you can sit there and just watch that bass take that fly, you know, from that call you made, you know, it's pretty amazing on my part. I love it. I love every minute of it.
That's awesome.
So what's it like doing those midnight to 4 a.m. trips on the kayak? Is it a little scary getting out there?
No, I don't go by myself. I have some friends that I go with that if I didn't have them, I wouldn't be where I am today as an angler. Mm-hmm. 100%. Like I said to you before, you have to make some good connections and good people. And I was fortunate enough to fall into a group of people that are incredible fishermen. So I go with them, but I will tell you, if you've ever had a hangover before, it feels like a hangover if you don't get the sleep that you need after depriving yourself between those hours, because you're not going out for just 4 hours. You're going out for 6 hours or 8 hours or whatever. And then you have to go work the entire day. And I've never felt so delusional in my life as I do after I get up the kayak from those early morning, late night trips.
What type of kayak are you fishing from?
So I have a Hobie Outback. Very fortunate enough to have somebody let me lease it for last summer and for this summer. So spoiled. Very spoiled.
We're Hobie guys. Qua has a Hobie skiff and mine's a Hobie compass. So
oh sweet.
We're Hobie guys.
Yeah, we're team Hobie over here. So.
Hobie
yeah.
Gang. I love it. Love to start a parade.
Now, have you done, you've done some destination trips. So what would you say is your most, most memorable trip? And do you have any plans, for future trips, future destination trips?
I love Florida so much. I think it has so much to offer. And every time I've gone, I've been very lucky to have a taste of what it's all about. Have I caught what I'm looking for yet? No. I mean, I just made a trip out to New Orleans. I didn't tell anyone about it because I got skunked. I went for big reds, and I've always wanted to catch just a massive red on fly. And I planned this amazing little trip out, was so fired up for it in the middle of winter, because that's when they're supposed to be, you know, just ready to go. Going to catch them. Let's do this. And then the weather didn't play out and whatever could have happened happened. And so you're asking about future trips. And of course I want to go, but right. I feel like there's so many outside factors that can ruin your trip before you even have a chance to get on the boat, which scares me from making plans to do it again.
Sure. Yeah.
So
when you're going long distances, there's a lot that can happen in the meantime while you're getting there. Our buddy was just down there. Our buddy Kyle was just down in Louisiana and they had some weather blow up on them pretty significantly while they were down there. So it happens down there this time of year. That's spring weather down there.
Yeah, I'm hoping to do another couple Florida trips. I'm really fortunate again to have some nice friends that live down there. You know, the whole bonefish tarpon permit deal. Of course, that's everyone's dream to get those fish at some point. So, yeah, but we're really fortunate where we are in the Northeast. Let's not forget, we have a very, very short window, but incredible fishing. So do I want to leave in the middle of my season? Hell no.
Right. Yeah. You're going to give up your whole time to work the migration to go down and chase something else.
Yeah.
You don't have to go that far though. I could cut your trip in half. I think I could cut your trip in half. I can cut your trip in half. Cause I'm going to do it from the kayak. I'm planning to do it. The big bull redfish from the kayak this year in Virginia. So that cuts your trip in half. It's a little bit easier to do.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. I might be down for that.
We got some stuff lining up here. So,
I mean, it won't be necessary on the fly. You might have to use a spin rod for that.
Sorry.
But I think if you look a little further, South Carolina has a couple of great captains I know down there that does it on the fly, bull reds on the fly in the marshes. So you don't have to go too far. They're down.
We'll see. I can't even think of like what it'd be like to fight a bull red on the fly. That's got to be absolute insanity. They're like stripers times 10.
Yeah. That's what a good drag and a freaking kayak can do. Just let them pull you around for a sled ride for a little bit.
Now, Nicole, we've had a couple conversations over the years, but I consider you a role model for the young anglers, ladies and boys alike. So looking to break into the world of fishing. It's obviously heavily dominated by men for whatever reason. I'm not really sure why there's still such a discrepancy in opportunities for lady anglers. What advice would you give a new lady angler looking to break into the business and, you know, keep their heads straight and what they should look for? What kind of advice would you give?
So the best advice I can give from the get-go is to pay somebody to get lessons from your local fly shop. There, if you get on their good side, they will always give you good tips. They will absolutely teach you how to fish, and then you can make friends with them and hopefully break into their community. They always have events, local events. Like, we have so many local events just in our greater Boston area. I joined a fishing club. I knew nobody. Not a single person. And you just have to not be afraid. Don't be intimidated. Everyone starts somewhere. And most of the people in this sport are good people and want to help. They want us to be better at conserving what we have and teaching other people how to treat nature with respect, right? So I don't want anyone to be afraid like I was. It took a lot for me to be able to open up and try to break through. And I really wish I had done it sooner. When we talk about girls trying to break into a man's sport, I think it's an opportunity more than it is a barrier. You know, everyone's looking for the numbers of women to increase and really just show, you know, the younger kids how to be better role model, like you said. And I have quite a few people that they teach youth groups, like underprivileged children, how to fish. And so they just ask, you know, if you have time, can you come and teach these kids with me? Or can you join, you know, this seminar? And it's like, okay, it's an hour out of my time. But then you meet all of these great people, and you know, that meet all these great people during that span of time, I should say. So just get involved as much as possible.
So on the flip side, what advice would you give the parents of a lady angler who's trying to break into the fishing world? I have two daughters. It's kind of a struggle for me to find reasonable content and things to show them that I feel comfortable putting in front of them for them to consume. You know, what advice would you give parents to kind of give them a voice and give them something to see to, you know, learn how to do this the right way? Because it's kind of a scary world, like having two little girls, and it's been great having someone like you for my girls to look up to. But, you know, there's not a lot of that. You know, we've talked about some other solid lady anglers, some other solid lady fly fisher girls up your way that you've told me about to kind of point them in that direction. But what other advice would you give for parents of young girls that want to learn how to fish and maybe fly fish?
I think it would still fall in that same category of the parents getting involved in the fly shops with, you know, like even if you're an adult trying to get lessons or break into this industry, I would say the same thing to parents. Chat with the fly shop. They know the good people. Get involved with the activities or the fishing shows and go and introduce yourself to all these people in the community. And like you were saying, it's different. It's different on social media. There are a lot of people that are out there for the wrong reasons, but there are a handful of wonderful women out there that are incredible role models. Abby Schuster, hands down, she's my role model. She does it right. She owns her own fly shop now. She's happy all the time. She doesn't talk badly about anyone. You know, she's just one of those people you always want to be around. That's the type of person that I would look for, you know, if I'm trying to put my kids in front of them.
Very nice. Yeah. She's a breath of fresh air, you would say, right?
She's incredible.
Yeah. I've been talking with my one buddy, and then I'm trying to get Abby on the show too. So that's kind of in the works. So.
Oh, I didn't know this.
I talked to Bobby a little bit earlier today. He's like, you should get Abby on. You know, she's from the vineyard, and she's pro staff over there. So you need to, if we're going to do a fly episode, we're going to have to bring her on.
She's an incredible fisherman. Incredible.
Very nice. Now, I know you recently purchased the lake house here, the pond, you know, with the pond there. Do you do a lot of freshwater fishing there? Do you get out there as much as you would like, or is it salt, 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 and then maybe some fresh?
I love the fresh pond fishing that I have here. And when I'm struggling with my striper fishing and not catching, I come up here and I whack them. You know, the largemouth, when you figure it out, they're a lot of fun on a 5-weight. They're so strong. And from a paddleboard, yeah, I get up here a lot.
So you would call your pond back there like your training grounds. You can hone your skills a little bit.
Yeah, it humbles me.
Okay. Now, what kind of give us an idea of your setups? Like what kind of setup are you using for the pond as opposed to stripers and so on? You probably have what? How many different setups do you have?
5 or 6 now. Unbelievable to say that. You think about all the money you spent on fishing gear. Oh,
for sure.
And you're paying full price for it.
Yep. It's not fun.
What's that?
Not fun at all.
No, I'm not pro staff and I don't care to be. So I'll pay a full price any day for my stuff. So my freshwater setup, my 5-weight, I actually got it on eBay. It's an Orvis Clearwater 5-weight. Bought a cheeky reel to go with it because it all really is just holding line. You're not using a lot of that reel for these fish. And I honestly can't even remember what line I have on there. Again, it really doesn't matter. It's probably like some Orvis line or something along those lines. I also use that for trout. Am I a good trout fisherman? Absolutely not. Horrible, horrible. I hate it. It's the worst. But that's the same setup. We'll just, you know, I switch out my tippet and that's all I do. I'm like, whatever. But for salt, my first fly rod I ever got was a Fenwick Atos, I believe it was 8-weight. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. I thought it was great. It's a great first rod for someone who's clumsy and breaking things all the time. I broke 2 of them. Oh. And they had a great warranty. So I still have it. It's like my backup to my backup. Okay. And then, so my friend has a rod company and I have a couple of his rods. It's WHUFF, Wuff Rod Company. I've been just buying stuff off of him because I really like it and I like to support my friends. And great. So that's what I have for my seven, which I'm obsessed with, my 7 weight. I just bought a 9 weight for him, from him. And then I also have another 8 weight. So all about supporting my friends. It's hard to make money in this business and break through and get recognition. So I'll always support my local shops and my friends. And that's why I'm a big Cheeky fan too. You know, I know people have mixed reviews on their stuff, but they're from Massachusetts. So of course I'm going to support them.
We're a big time supporter of shopping local, shopping small business. So that works with us. We did a tackle shop episode of one of our local tackle shops last week, and it resonated very well with a lot of people. Everybody loved it. People were saying how amazing it was, and that our buddy has done a great job with that shop. And it's just nice to highlight, you know, some of the dying breeds of tackle shops, because there's not a lot of good ones left.
Yeah, totally agree. And, you know, I would absolutely spend a couple $100s or more on, you know, a Thomas and Thomas and things like that. But at the end of the day, I still feel like it's all about you as an angler and how good you are. And it's not about the line or the rod. People will probably kill me for saying this, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really make that big of a difference to me. I'm still new at this, so I'm going to be shopping and supporting locally until the end.
Very nice. So we've loosely been trying to plan a Snakehead on the Fly trip, I don't know, for like two and a half years now. What are your thoughts on that? When are we going to make that happen? And what rod is going to be the rod that you bring with you for you to come up and get your first Snakehead and Snakehead on the Fly?
Is a 7 weight sufficient?
I think so. I think you could make it work with 7 weight.
A 7 will work.
Yeah. Depends. I would do my 7.
You can get into some bigger class of fish, but I think a 7 weight will suffice.
I mean, I just love the feel of the 7 weight that I have. It's my favorite setup ever. We need to make this happen as soon as possible. I'm actually in New Jersey this weekend.
What?
I know. I should have told you. I have a dog show on Sunday that I'm bringing. In the morning, I'm bringing my dog to the show. It's another podcast for another time.
The dog episode.
Yeah. So maybe I'll bring my rods with me and we can make a quick trip.
I mean, the snakes are awake. Probably all you really need is an intermediate line because they're subsurface right now. So
yeah, I think you could get them with some clousers right in my one spot too.
Clousers. If she has any weedless clousers, might even be better. You know what I mean? So we might be able to reach. The only problem at our spot is casting. I mean, she might be able to like
hit the side pockets,
or she might be able to loop cast. But yeah. I mean, like we said,
you don't think I can loop cast, do you?
Hey,
we can get in tighter. I was on these fish the other night. Like I was literally getting them at my feet. So,
or you can just have Dan stand in the back when the cars don't fly by. Just Dan could yell cast, and you'll just cast it.
How close are we talking to the road here?
Not that close. Get out of here. It's not that bad. But it'll be worth it once it happens. So outside of the Snakehead trip, what other trips are you looking to plan this year? I know you said we talked about some memorable destination trips, but do you have anything else planned besides the redfish? Maybe the redfish trip?
Yeah, I already did the redfish trip. I'm probably not going to do another one unless I move to Louisiana. I'm going to go to Key West in a couple of weeks for bonefish and tarpon. And then I want to do something this fall after the stripers are gone. I'm not sure yet. Who knows if the world's going to even open back up at that point, but it would be nice to go somewhere, Belize, wherever.
Someplace international. I'm guessing you want to do an international.
Yeah,
trip.
That would be fun. I'm just up for anything. We're all tired of sitting at home, right? Even though we're fishing outside, it would be just nice to move about and not have any restrictions.
Go to Costa Rica, find some rooster fish, maybe Christmas Island, find some GTs.
Okay. You let me know when I'm coming.
We'll get you on some fish down here. Get some sheep's head, try to get a sheep's head on the fly.
Yes. I love sheep's head.
Have you caught them?
Spin long time ago charter in Florida. So we have to open that door now on the fly.
It's doable. We just got to find them shallow. We were just talking to another guest on the podcast about sheep's head on the fly. And up here, he said it's a task, to say the least. He said he's gotten them in Florida. I have a buddy down in the Charleston area who does really well on them in the marshes. And he'll use a shrimp fly and just put some shrimp scent on it. And it does the trick. Now, I don't know if our previous guest was doing any scent on his flies, but that seemed to be the kicker there. So,
I mean, we've done tog on a fly, but I haven't caught a sheep on a fly yet.
Wait a minute. You got a tog on fly?
Yeah, we did tog on flies. I mean, it was off the jetties. It was like 8 feet of water. One of my buddies tied on a crab fly. We soaked the crap out of that crab fly in a green crab juice, and then we literally just floated it all out, and then literally just wiggled a line till it sank to the bottom. And the fight on like a 15, 16 inch tog on a fly, what do we have that day? I think it was an 8 weight. Yeah, that rod almost bent in half. It was a struggle just trying to strip him up off out of the rocks.
Look at her mind. It was fun.
I have a picture of it somewhere. I just got to find it. But it was funny. He was having the blast. We were just bored because the tar were just so relentless. They were just eating anything. So we're like, hey, let's break out the fly rod.
I'm blown away. I just don't even know what to say. Speechless? Because I was talking about it with one of my friends about how I would love to get one on fly. But it's just damn near impossible. You got to get down like 16 feet. Yeah. You're in 8 feet, apparently.
Yeah, jetty's only 8 feet. You know, you get sinking line. You just float it off the back, and it just keep wiggling that line out until it hits the bottom.
Okay, so wild.
it's a very interesting thing. Now the sheep's head up here, where our sheep's head is a totally different breed. They just like to feed one way and one way only, and there's nothing else you can do about it. I mean we have reds here, but. You know, those things are like unicorns. So I haven't found one yet. I mean, they're around. I had two roll on my fly last year, and yeah, that was it. They rolled on it, but he just didn't commit to it. I knew it was a red instead of a striper because I saw the gold belly. So yeah, came on. It rolled on a white and green clouser.
Those clousers, I'm telling you, sure thing every time.
That's everything.
That's the magic. Yeah. Now, you guys strictly on clousers up there, or do you actually guys have use crab patterns and stuff like that too for your marshes?
Oh, for the marsh?
Yeah.
You guys aren't going to believe this. I don't even know if I should share this information.
Is it a secret?
Who knows if it'll even work this year? But in the marsh last year, I was using freshwater flies. Like literally like baby sunfish and catching all of my stripers on a 1.5 to 2 inch baby sunfish fly.
Interesting.
It was on a freshwater hook and I was crushing in the marsh on those.
Now are your marshes brackish or are they more salty?
Salt.
All salt.
It's all salt. Okay.
Interesting. So sunfish flies. There you go, Quah. Add that to the boat.
It's wild.
Sunfish flies.
I'll send it to you. Actually, didn't tie it myself. I got it on Big Y Flies. It was like one of those discount flies. I'm like, yeah, I could use one of these or two of these. I caught all my stripers.
I love Big Y. I love Big Y Fly. Every time I order, there's always a big box that comes in. I'm just like, yes, fly, Evan. It gets to a point. I'm like, for the amount of time I spend sitting here on this vice tying this fly, I could just buy like 10. But I, like you said, it's the joys of catching one on your own made stuff. So.
Yeah.
All right. So Qua, I'm going to hand it over to you. If you got anything to add to Nicole here's episode.
Probably a few things. You are a women's fly angler. Do you meet a lot of other local women's fly angler or as you travel far and wide?
No, I don't meet them. I wish I had just one girlfriend that I could go fishing with. It sucks. So if there's anybody out there that is decent enough and wants to fish with me, please hit me up because I need some more women friends. It's not that I don't love my dude friends, but sometimes you just need a girlfriend.
That fishes with you.
All right, ladies, that's at underscore Nick B underscore. Reach out to Nicole here and be her friend, please.
Be my friend, please.
As long as you can pick up a fly rod and use it well, you could be Nicole's friend today. Yeah. Sign up.
Qualifications. No, actually, must love wings and IPAs after fishing.
Damn, and dogs. I can and dogs. Do
and dogs. And dogs. Yeah, I have three dogs, but I don't bring them fishing. Don't worry.
Now, your dogs, they have kind of like water. Some of them have water related names, right?
Oh, yeah. Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah. So actually, it's really coincidental. What's the word I'm looking for? Is that the word? Coincidental?
Sounds about yeah. right.
All right. So I might not be, you know, the best English or grammar.
You're doing fine.
Yeah. So anyway, when I started fishing, I got my third Aussie at the time. And I really wanted to name him fishing themed name. And I had a list of names and I just couldn't settle on one. And then when I brought him home, I was like, oh my God, his name is going to be Fisher. There's no questions about it. It's Fisher. So that's one of my dogs now. And then my heart dog, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the term heart dog. He passed away last May. At 7 years old due to a brain infection. And he was like my water dog. He didn't have a fishing name or anything like that. He was named after my last name, Bodette. I named him Bodie. died suddenly. And he was just like ultimate water dog. Always chasing waves, always just swimming like crazy, loved fishing. And when he passed away, I'm like, I've got to memorialize him. So I ended up getting another Aussie this past December, and I knew he had to have a fishing name. And I knew I wanted to name him after something that Bodie did. So all purebred dogs have kennel names. And so his breeder's name is Bellamist. And so the full name is Bellamist Chasing Waves, and his name is Tide. Right. So wherever he is, Tide, bring him over here so you guys can see him for a second. Tide, come. Come on, bud.
We have a definitive dog lover here. So
nothing wrong with that. I love dogs.
This is Tide.
So hi, Tide.
He's 6 months old. And he's a wild man.
And he's got some energy. Look at him.
So yeah, we've got some fishing names in the house now.
Very nice. Anything else you got, Qua?
Besides fishing, are you into hunting at all or any of that kind of outdoor stuff?
I am glad you asked. So if we're going to put this out there, I would love to learn how to hunt. I'd love to shoot turkeys, birds, you name it. I'm into that. So if anyone wants to take me under their wing, I'm down.
That's at underscore Nick B underscore. Take this girl hunting.
Yeah, this girl hunting.
Take this girl hunting. Be her fly fishing buddy.
We all love to be outside. Do you guys hunt?
I don't. My wife would kill me if I had two expensive hobbies like this. So.
Yeah. No, mine wouldn't let me kill animals.
I could probably get into bird hunting. I could probably enjoy bird hunting. That's the only thing I don't like, really. I don't want to go shooting bears and deer and things like that. I could get into some bird hunting myself.
I could do some duck hunting. I think I could do duck hunting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me see. I think that's about it.
Well, Nicole, it was an absolute blast having you on today. Thank you for joining us.
I can't believe you guys thought of me. I really appreciate that. I hope I can fish with your daughter one day.
You were one of the first people that I thought of when we brainstormed this. You can ask him. I said, I got this girl up north. She's a fly fishing girl. She's an absolute assassin. No, she's we'll get her on board. And I think it'll be a good transition to highlight some lady anglers. And you know, I don't think it needs to be said that, like you say, fishermen, like we're all fishermen. That's what comes down to it. But gotta give the ladies some love on the podcast. And we want to support whatever you're doing there, and you're doing good things. And like I said, you're a role model to my kids, and I greatly appreciate that. So,
and I agree, you know, there's not that many women fishermen out there, even if fly is even more unique. You know what I mean? You can literally consider yourself a unicorn because The average, like, we're both in the community a lot, and fly fishing, I'm pretty much in there too. The average typical, you know, fisherman is always men. Like, I don't even know a single fly fishing woman here, and we fish a lot.
I don't either.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, angler women, like, you know, like rod and reel, sure, I know a few. But when you're talking about fly fishing women, that's like far and far and wide. Like, I literally just text, no, like 30 minutes ago, I text my buddies. I was like, hey, guys, I got a fly fishing woman. They're like, you found a unicorn? And these guys are like, they're out of their mind. They're like, no freaking way. They're like, is she married? I was like, I'm not going to ask that. But I'm just saying, they're like, I was like, so what does she do? I was like, I don't know. She likes dogs, fly fishing, and drinks beer. I was like, dude, yes. She's like the perfect wifey material.
Perfect. And now we have a dating show going. Yes.
I'm just like, you know, go ahead.
I was just going to say, why do you think fly fishing is so unpopular then?
It's not so much that it's unpopular. It's just very specialized. Yeah. There's and not for nothing. It's a more expensive venture than spinning gear.
Yep.
So it takes a huge investment. And I think that scares some people off initially. And then obviously the learning your craft is a big part of it. You know, that's takes time and money and everything else. So I think it's just so much easier to walk into Walmart and pick up a spinning rod and a reel and go on vacation and have a throwaway rod. Whereas there's not really a throwaway fly rod. It's takes commitment. It takes a lot of honing your craft. Like, you are always doing things that are going to be making you a better fly fisherman down the road. And that's something, whereas I pick up my spinning gear and I do the same thing every time. It's not like I don't need to hone my skills. I just need to look for different details.
Yeah.
But with the fly, there's all different types of casts. There's all different types of, you know, scenarios where you got to do this, you got to do that. And it just takes a lot more of commitment. I think that's what it comes down to, is money and commitment and time is really what it is. So.
Yeah. And if we're fly anglers, we're always learning something new. You know, we're always adjusting. You know, I mean, you've trout and you say you're not the great at it, but have you ever tried trout? You know, you try for trout fishing, like, you'll literally throw the same fly to that fish 10 times and they just look at it and they just like, okay, well, I don't want to touch it. Well, if you twitch it a weird little way, it's going to activate them to come grab it. You know what I mean? So I think sometimes fly anglers, that what I think about them is like, it's a little bit more intense, a little bit more focused. And a lot of fly anglers, when we do go out, we are usually mostly solo. It's serenity, you know, when the fact that, just say, on a trout stream, your environment, your background, your outdoor, everything just flows right. And you had a really bad day at work or week at work, and you go out there with your fly rod and it's just you and you're making those casts. You may not even catch a fish, but, you know, like that, it's like yoga to us. You know, it's nice, easy. It's calming. Every cast, everything, you hear the line strips off. It sounds perfect.
Can't agree with you anymore. It's literally exactly as described right there.
Yeah. It's something different than, yeah, I can break out my spin rod and just throw 100 casts and be like, okay, well, I'm just retrieving it. Flying. Yeah. It's totally something different. Like, every day you learn something new. Like, hey, if I go off in a little angle and I let it lay down, it lays down perfectly without splashing. You know, we're always trying to figure out new things, new ways to do things, you know?
Mm-hmm. For sure.
I'll never forget, like, watching, A River Runs Through It as a kid and seeing, like, fly fishing romanticized in that movie. Like, that's where I first took notice of it. And that's an old movie, you know, Brad Pitt, I think Robert Redford's in that movie, but that's a great fly fishing flick there. And that's what kind of got me interested. But it was further down the road where I decided to pick up a fly rod and give it a try. And I caught some fish my first time out, but I did. I hired an Orvis guide. We went out on St. Patrick's Day 4 years ago. My first fish on the fly was a 17 inch or 16 and a half inch rainbow on a rabbit hair jig, on a rabbit hair fly. So it was kind of fun.
That's awesome.
But I haven't picked up the fly rod since.
All right. Well, we'll make some changes here.
Yeah. I got, Quaz not going to let me live that down. So I will be,
No, if you're hopping off my boat, you're throwing a fly rod. We're finding you a bass on a fly rod this year. And once I get you hooked, it's a whole nother ball game.
Yeah, it's okay.
We're going to have to make this happen, all three of us.
Yeah, I have a buddy that lives up in Connecticut. He moved up to Connecticut now, so he fishes the marshes back there. I don't know how far Connecticut is from you guys. But like I said, if things line up right and it's right, you know, I'll throw Dan in the car. I'll tow the skiff all the way up to you. We'll go exploring for a weekend in your area with the boat.
Be prepared. It's bloody up here.
It's bloody. That doesn't sound good. It's bloody.
There are some nights where there's like 20 boats and like 8 kayaks all fighting for one spot.
Oh,
and I'm the only woman out there and I'm like, excuse me.
See, that's where
I'll come to you.
That's where you got to use being the woman, right? That's where you got to use that to your advantage.
Look, I'm just a lady trying to fish.
Now, yeah, you're more than welcome to come down here. We have an open invitation with us. We'd love to fish.
Anytime.
Yes, I definitely would be down.
Yeah, just reach out to Dan. Give me your schedule. Like, I'll set my schedule and we'll all get on the boat one day and we'll go out and we'll slay some fish.
Sweet.
Nicole, it was an absolute pleasure having you on today. We really appreciate your time, and you gave us some amazing content. Everybody's going to love it. You're great. She is @_NickB_. That's how you can get in touch with her to be her fly fishing buddy or teach her how to hunt. Otherwise, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much.
We really appreciate it. And we can only hope with this podcast that we reach a lot more girls out there, or parents that like have girls that are interested in fishing. And then, you know, it's nice to be a role model. I like it. Like, you know, the fact that like Dan's daughter is like starstruck with you, like it warms my feeling. I'm like, man, I wish somebody would like look at me like I was an idol.
I look at you that way.
I now look at you that way too.
but yes, it was definitely a pleasure having you on. Thank you. And we'll definitely bring you on for probably another podcast for something.
We should get her on with the other fly girl. We should get line them
Abby?
Up time. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
You know Abby. What? We could do me, you, her, Abby, and then we'll bring Bobby on, and that'll be it.
Well, you just got to delete me out of that equation because I'm the
non-fly guy.
I'm the low man on the totem pole.
No. End of season, you will be a fly guy. I can feel it in my bones. You're going to be right. just like me.
Okay.
All right. See? Goals.
Hey, listen, I'm going to try. I'm going to hone my skills because it's just another avenue to catch fish. So.
Exactly.
Well, Nicole, thanks again. We appreciate it. We're going to stay on. It was a pleasure. I'll be talking to you. You know that. But let's plan right. something soon. Okay.
All right. You have a great night.
Have a great week. Bye, guys.
See you, Nicole.
All right.
Another good one in the books.
Definitely another good one. She's definitely she's doing her thing, man. Only 4 years in, and she's doing some good stuff up there.
Yeah, she's notched a couple of nice things on her belt for sure. She's doing some big things, and I think she's gonna have a huge year this year. She's got some new gear. She's really excited to get rolling, and I've loved following along the last few years. She's great. So
cool. And you know, it'll be nice to get her down here, get her on some fish. You know, we might even take out your daughter that day with her, so she's spend the whole day on the water.
That would be awesome. Well, thank you again, everybody, for tuning in. Please like, comment, share, subscribe, and give us those 5-star reviews. It all helps us. We really appreciate everybody tuning in. It makes all the difference. We wouldn't be able to do this without all of you. So thank you so much. You can find us at facebook.com/TideChasersPodcast. And then at Instagram, we are Tide_Chasers. We will be having some great content coming forward, so please keep tuning in, and we're going to keep bringing the heat for you. So thank you so much. Qua, it was a pleasure, buddy.
As always, man.
See you next time.
All right, see you next time, guys.